Don, gentlemen, thank you very much. So we have 10 minutes for questions, and you're very welcome, of course, to simply come to the microphone, identify yourself, and in keeping with the traditions that you've already heard for Q&A, if you can keep your questions crisp and to the point, that would be much appreciated.
John Zmirak, stream.org. My question is for Dan McCarthy, though anyone else can chime in. It seems that among some of the people who are organizing around the banner of national conservatism, there are Catholic integralists who reject in principle the religious freedom, which seems to me the essence of what it is to be American. How can people who reject the American founding and reject the First Amendment in any sense be part of national conservatism? It seems to me that if they're conservative at all, it's in a distinctly un-American fashion. What role can these people have, and how can they be part of a multi-religious coalition?
Much as Don said, the ways in which political movements get labeled often are not the ways they would choose to label themselves. So national conservatism right now is a banner that is attached to a great many eclectic sub-movements, some of whom have Catholic integralist leanings, some of whom may be monarchists. Others are a kind of repackaging of the reform conservatives of a decade ago, or even of the compassionate conservatives of 20 years ago. Still others are, more properly called national conservatives because they are paleo-conservatives who reflect a sort of Pat Buchanan point of view. That's the camp I identify with the most myself. So, as is the case with any kind of political movement, the label is not necessarily always accurate, and the coalition is going to include elements that have, profound disagreements with one another. However, the question becomes, what does that cash out into in practice? Integralism includes people who, have quite radical views and want to restructure America completely. It also includes people who simply want to have blue laws to prevent, treating Sunday as just another day of the week. So integralism is itself quite a broad, category in terms of how it gets applied in terms of practical policy. The more radical elements of integralism, they have a very loud following on the internet, but they don't necessarily have a huge number of popular supporters.
Hi, we have a monarchist here. I think he's open about it. So my question is, what I'd like to hear addressed is the concept of fusionism, like right now, or the tension right now, is not really between, and Danny McCarthy alluded to it, it's not really between traditionalists and libertarians. It's really between fusionists and the new right, or the alt-right. And it's not really about the ideas themselves, it's about what we're willing to compromise principally to get what we want, right? The concept of we have to win, we have to be aggressive, we have to fight. That sort of approach to it, in a way, kind of giving up our own civil principles, if you will, to take a sort of almost a Nietzschean power struggle with the other side. If they're going to fight, we have to. So could some, like Chris Rufo, somebody mentioned him earlier, that's sort of his take on it, is that we have to be willing to fight for our traditional values, et cetera, et cetera. So any of you, probably starting with Daniel McCarthy, that wants to address that, I'd love to hear it. Thanks.
Well, I don't want to monopolize the conversation. Partly that is a tactical question as well. So for the past, 20 to 30 years, conservatives have perhaps not fought cultural battles with the same intensity that the left has pursued its cultural objectives. And we see the results of that, that the country has moved in a very strong left-wing direction, at least as far as our elite culture is concerned, as far as the culture, the institutions that are most powerful in shaping the rising generation. I think, the new right is quite correct to challenge the old fusionist right and say, what have you actually achieved over the course of certainly the last two decades and maybe longer than that? I do want to say there is a distinct difference between the new right, which is eclectic and it has its, more extreme elements to be sure, and the so-called alt-right. I think the alt-right is a crackpot element. It is distinct from the new right. The alt-right tends to be the racialists and the people who, you know, are filled with, not a positive vision of the common good, but rather a hatred for various groups and categories of Americans.
Hi, my name is Ethan Yang. I'm a law student at George Mason. I'm also a researcher at AIER. My question is geared more towards Professor Peterson. You referenced the almost unstoppable tendency of the bureaucracy to continue to grow, and you referenced how there's constituency groups that continue, and there's a lot of political economic forces that really incentivize growth over reduction, public school system, regulatory state, Federal Reserve, what have you. So I was just wondering if you believe that this growth is unstoppable and is basically just, you know, a slow march towards a suboptimal state of affairs where, you know, we're just being sapped of our prosperity and our values, or do you think there's, you know, like a solution to that is that's within the near future?
Well, and I guess my perspective is that, and I see this more from the California perspective, Walter Russell Mead called the California state form of government the blue state model. And I'm actually very optimistic that the blue state model is collapsing before our eyes, which is to say that the guarantee has often been made that if you live in California, you're going to pay much higher taxes, but you're also at the same time going to be given much better services. And ask any Californian that's still remaining in the state today, and I think you will find that most people know that there's not a nexus there anymore. And so ways that I'm optimistic about that is that I think there is a much more public awareness about the failures of government, whether it's based on bureaucracy because of a technocratic culture or this woke culture that we're also seeing, especially in school systems. What we're seeing in school board meetings, as an example, shows that there's, I think, benefit within the populist movement, especially at the local level, to hold governments more accountable. I also am optimistic about what we're going to see over the next couple years, particularly in California, but I would argue in the other blue states. We have not yet seen the political consequences for the shutdowns that have happened in blue states due to COVID regulations. And you all probably know that in California we had a recall process that was defeated, but I think lost in the story of what happened in the recall vote was the fact that we even had one. The fact that we had a governor that won by an absolute landslide in 2018, had to stand for a recall vote less than 4 years later, is remarkable. And a lot of the energy behind that across partisans were people that were very angry at the fact that schools were closed and businesses were closed. And I think that we're going to see this in local elections, county elections, and even state elections, that there's going to be a higher level of accountability to the overreach of government at all levels.
Tony Gill, University of Washington. The philosophical debates here are really interesting, but I want to note something that happened that was somewhat unusual and that not many people talk about in the last election. Donald Trump was able to gather remarkably high, historically speaking, levels of support from African Americans and Latinos. Not majority, but certainly higher than most other Republican candidates recently. There's a new constituency out there. They seem to be looking for something. I don't know if it's Donald Trump personally or what. How do you take what you said here today and translate it to them at the grassroots?
Well, I'll jump in on that again, seeing through the California lens, because we saw that actually in this recall election, when you look back at the exit polling, a far higher percentage of Latino voters voted for the recall than had originally supported Newsom back in 2018. I think we're seeing that tectonic shift happening, and it's happening on class and not race, right? And I think one of the premise for that, and I think this does get to a little bit of the question around fusionism and how we understand a conservative case for governance and policymaking, not just philosophy, is to say that it's arguable that many of those people in the lower and middle classes are beginning to pull away from the Democratic Party because, as Reagan once said, they're not leaving the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is leaving them. And they're leaving them on the major premise that government institutions are no longer defending their interests. I mean that in three particular areas. Education has become highly ideological and is not serving the interests of public school parents who don't have options about where they send their kids. Public safety, we're definitely seeing that in California, whether it's direct crime levels or homelessness, we're not seeing enforcement of norms. And then finally, just business development and the overregulation that's happening, particularly to small businesses, especially based on the premise of environmental regulations, is that we are paying $5.25 a gallon for gas in California on average. And those in the lower and middle classes understand who's putting those prices, how those prices are on those at the gas pump. And it's not Republicans.
You see a similar thing in Virginia. I mean, Virginia has moved so much in the blue direction, but there's a revolution going on, and what's going on in the schools in one of the big liberal counties, a very high federal employee. I kid, but my concern is that we'll win so big in Virginia it might straighten out what's his name? Biden administration.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm afraid we're out of time. And before I ask you to join me in thanking Don and our panelists, let's thank them first and then hold your seats.